The Grand Prix of Indianapolis is brought to you by the Indiana Union Construction Industry. Value on display every day.
Welcome back to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. As our post-race coverage continues, or consider it a special edition of Trackside / the Talk of Gasoline Alley. The IndyCar Grand Prix is complete. Will Power wins for the second time in 4 years, and we're here to chat about it and continue the conversation on the month of May. My name is Kevin Lee. Greg Rakestraw is along. Donald Davidson will join us in a little bit as well. Win number 30 in his career for Will Power, and now he has the momentum. Second at Phoenix, first in Indianapolis. The one they all want is coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow. If you have something for us, 317-239-1070 is our telephone number. You can tweet us at KevinLee23 or at Greg Rakestraw. Greg, we knew this coming in. We knew it was going to be very difficult to beat the Penske's. I thought they might have an opportunity to get about, five of the top eight or nine. It wasn't quite that much of a beatdown, but it was Will Power that was hooked up. Nobody had anything for him today.
Yeah, it looked like briefly Elio Castro Neves might, but it was just kind of more of a victory coming out of pit lane, maybe for one segment of the race. You know, if you look at this as a three-stop race and then a four-segment race, Will Power was clearly the dominant car for three of those four segments. And while Scott Dixon was shaving maybe a tenth of a second off of that lead in the closing laps, it was never anywhere that was close enough to really to give Power any spot of bother. You could feel that maybe it was somewhat of a victory for the rest of the field to have Dixon finish second and Ryan Hunter-Reay finish third, to show you how impressive Penske has been all season, to show you how impressive Penske was in qualifying yesterday. If you go into the day and say Penske cars will be 1, 4, and 5, that is almost something of a surprise to some of the folks. So solid days for Dixon, solid days for Hunter-Reay, and even the guy that finished in fourth in Simon Pagenaud, because he was fifth of the five Penske cars yesterday in qualifying, he had a pretty big smile on his face post-race too. Today was a good points day for him, for the guy that is driving that number one based on winning said points title a year ago.
Now, I think there are several guys that can come away that aren't winners and feel like it's a win. When I was talking with Scott Dixon, I kind of got that sense. I did give Dixon a chance because he's Scott Dixon, and he's one of the 10 or 15 best drivers of all time, and it might be a little higher on the list than that, and his numbers would dictate that with 40 career wins, but he's the only one I really gave any kind of chance of winning. I thought that was a solid mission for him to finish second. Michael Andretti didn't have a great deal of confidence coming in, so Hunter-Reay finishing third is strong for them. Pagenaud was saying, I'm just hoping to collect points today. I know we don't really have a winning car unless something extreme happens, so he's very, very pleased getting inside the top five. Elio is the one that's going to come away disappointed. Elio is the one that I'm sure felt like he could fight for the win coming home in fifth. And then there's some others out throughout the 10. Great start and run again for Ray Hall. This is the third time he's come from the back to the front in this race.
I would say a little more focus on Friday might be the thing for Graham going forward. Now, I say that, you know, tongue firmly planted in cheek.
Well, and he said that many times before, too. That's been the issue with that team in previous years, is they just haven't qualified as well as they feel like they should.
Last year, he qualified well. He was fine. The car was underweight. Had to go all the way to the back and gain 20 spots during the course of the race. This year, it was simply about 10 spots as he finished in sixth. The only other guy that you thought might be a wild card just because of his individual talent and the way that the coin racing team with Sebastian Bourdais has found some magic in road and street course races. You thought, all right, he's in the fast six. Maybe they can tactic their way to a good finish. But clearly that wasn't in the cards as he was out virtually in the first two laps of the race.
Yeah, for Sebastian Bourdais, two straight races, he has not gotten the opportunity to compete at all. Last time it was in a crash. This, I haven't seen what the official reason was, whether it was the engine or whether it was electrical, some sort of a mechanical issue for Sebastian Bourdais. And the guy that was the championship leader after three races is now quickly losing spots in the championship. Some others that would feel good about their days, Max Chilton coming home in seventh. That's a good day for him. It's an okay day for Alexander Rossi. I would say it's probably better than okay because we really felt like the Chevys had an advantage over the Hondas. So for him to come home eighth, it's a really good day for Spencer Pigot, who on track pass some heavyweights. I believe in the opening stint, he passed Simon Pagenaud, and he finishes in head of Juan Pablo Montoya.
And it is a day that could have been even better for Pickett because he stalled the car on his first pit stop. He cost himself about an extra 14 seconds having to get the starter out and refire that car and head off because he was in my pit area today. The guys that I was focused on in pit lane typically were Pickett because of the day that he had, Juan Pablo Montoya because, well, he's JPM, and Graham Rahal given his history of charging from the back here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. On his first stop, he entered in from 7th, kind of filtered back to about 14th or 15th, would stay, not with a lead pack, there wasn't a lead pack today, but was inside or around the top 10 for most of the day. So you're right, Kevin, it was a very good day for Spencer. It could have been even better. He did not have that misfire in his first pit stop.
And along with Elio, who's a little bit disappointed with 5th, the guy who would be extremely disappointed would be Joseph Newgarden. He had a top 5 car, so it took some circumstances to keep 4 of the 5 Penske's from finishing, you know, because they were in position to maybe get 4 of their cars in the top 6 or so. Newgarden was running 4th, and they've got a malfunction with their pit speed limiter and had to serve 2 drive-through penalties, and he still finishes in the 11th position. And maybe James Hinchcliffe is also someone who was running in the top 5, and I wasn't in his section, so I don't know specifically what the issue was there that put him all the way back in 13th position. Marco Andretti, again, doesn't have an opportunity to compete. That's been pretty standard operating procedure. However, in this case, officials deemed that it was his fault. He was penalized for punting Tony Kanaan on lap 1 and had to serve a drive-through. And then Tony Kanaan is another one. He didn't feel like he had a great car today.
Sure.
He was thinking maybe top 6, top 8. They took a big swing at it to try to make some changes. They were really struggling on finding the right balance between aero grip and mechanical grip, and the big conundrum is how much downforce do you have, because you have to be fast on this very long straightaway, but the car has to handle in the turns. But as mentioned, he gets punted in the beginning, and he's almost a full lap down throughout the entirety of the race.
The other guy that's worthy of mention just because of what his previous finishes have been in this event over the last 3 years is Charlie Kimball. It was a struggle yesterday in qualifying for Charlie, and he ended up parked in the same area that Sebastian Bourdais did as he exited for what would be turn 4 of the oval, turn 1 of the road course. In other words, meaning I'm going straight ahead, I'm parking the car, knowing my day is done after just 32 laps. So 5th, and 21st in his 4th effort here at the IndyCar GP.
But Will Power, the day belongs to him. That was as dominant a drive as you're going to see, and that's not the first time we've said that. As we watch the podium celebration continue, pictures and a little swilling of champagne from very, very big bottles. I hope those three gentlemen don't drink all of that. That would not be good for them at all. There's quite a bit to consume. Just some sips now for Will Power, along with Scott Dixon and Ryan Hunter-Reay on the podium. And speaking of the podium celebration, that stunned me a little bit when I'm walking up and I look over. First of all, in previous years, I'm pretty sure that the winner has just simply stopped on pit lane.
Right.
I know that's where I've done the victory lane interview or the victory circle interview in previous years. So this year it was to the victory podium. But I look over, Scott Dixon is the first to pull in. Well, wait a minute. What did I miss?
We kind of had some coverage plans that changed on the fly, but that happened in the pre-race. It happened in the post-race as well. Thankfully, you led the charge. Myself and Rob Howden would be there to get some other interviews as well. But there are always some differences here, and obviously that's the thing when this is just the 4th race and not the upcoming 101st race. You can do things a bit differently at this race because clearly this was, even if this wasn't the most intense or exciting race, this is whetting the appetite for fans to come back later this month to kick off the month of May. And given the fact that I believe it was, and I'm only half joking about this, about 40 degrees warmer than it was a year ago, I think fans were just happy to be here and not be bundled up the way they were, you know, 12 months ago.
Yeah, it was a picture-perfect day here. And the other thing you take note of today, that this is, at least it happened last year, maybe it's happened each year, is the track invasion. So you look out near the Yard of Bricks on the main straightaway, and there are hundreds and hundreds of fans, and they're not just by the Yard of Bricks. They're I don't know if you're allowed to walk all the way around the track, but I see them at least the length of pit lane.
I believe you are. I think after the race, you're allowed to walk the track. I think before the race, it was just the pit lane area. I think you can walk the course today.
The entire lap?
I think so.
Of the oval? How cool would that? Just do your little jog, your little lap.
I need my 2.4 miles of steps today. Let me go get it around a course that just hosted the IndyCar Series race.
Yeah, yeah, I've done that. That's one of the things I like to do is jog the circuit at different tracks around the way. Places like Road America with a lot of elevation, a little more challenging than some others. Now, Will Power winning race number 30 of his career. He picked up pole number 47 yesterday. This guy is still in the middle of his career. He's already considered as good as anybody has ever been on a road and street circuit.
And that's an interesting point because he's kind of in the in-between generations in the IndyCar Series. You know, TK and Elio obviously will be intertwined forever, but Scott Dixon, even though he is younger, is part of that group because they have now ran together and against each other, you know, for over a decade and a half at this point. You know, Will obviously has now been with the IndyCar Series since the days of the merger, which were nearly a decade of, but he's not kind of in the young group. He's not really in the old guy veteran group. He's kind of a man on an island, so to speak, despite being a part of the best team in the sport. And so I think when we talk about maybe the greatness or historical legacy, so to speak, of Will, he doesn't get mentioned because of what you just talked about. He is still in the middle of his career. But, you know, knock on wood from a health standpoint, everything stays intact from that direction. He's going to put up some gigantic numbers by the end of his career.
And what's scary is that you might consider Scott Dixon an older driver because he's been around longer,
right?
Because he came into the sport when he was winning races at 20 years old. He's only about 7 or 8 months older than Will Power.
Crazy, isn't it?
Scott Dixon is 36. He'll turn 37 later this year. Will Power just turned 36 earlier this year. But these guys are as fit as you can find, and they've got several more years in their prime. And, you know, as much as we want to talk about 20 years for Kanaan and Castro Neves, they still have the ability to race for many, many years if afforded the opportunity. And certainly Elio is still as fast as anyone, and Kanaan still has his moments, and he's going to be as good a pick as anybody for the 500 here coming up in a couple of weeks as well. Again, if you have something for us, 317-239-1070 is the telephone number, or at KevinLee23 on Twitter. The storyline today is what the Chevys were able to do on top of the Hondas, but you look at the podium, and two of the three are Hondas, so mission accomplished on that front. I'll be curious to see what people think of the attendance today. I don't have much of a look at it, but from what I could see, pretty nice crowd.
Yep.
I saw a lot of people in Oval Turn 1 and Oval Turn 4, people on the hillsides. This is just I don't know what the number is, but it's simply a nice day with an opportunity for some people to enjoy IndyCar racing.
Well, let's face it. You know, this event, because it's not the Indy 500, and you know, tip of the cap to the IMS folks. They did a great job, I thought, in marketing this event. You saw a flood of television ads, and you heard a lot of radio ads promoting that, hey, come here, get closer. You know, you have the chance to walk on the track like we have talked about and be in pit lane before the course of this race. But fans always also know, hey, they're not going to sell this race out. If I want to go, this is a race I can walk up and get tickets to. And clearly you will never have a better day, you know, with sunny temperatures and in the upper 70s and 0% chance of rain. Not that it would stop a road course race, but still, you'll never have a better walk-up day than today. So let's see if maybe some new, I wouldn't say IndyCar fans, but some new road course IndyCar fans were created today. And let's see if hopefully a solid day today, even if it wasn't the greatest race, leads to more folks coming out and enjoying the celebration of motorsport a
year
from now.
I think that's one of the hopes that you have, that you can use this facility and the lure of the Indianapolis 500 to try to create some more fans in this market and be able to, even if it's just grow the television ratings in Indianapolis and grow the audience here on the radio broadcasts and get people a little bit more interested. And then it jump starts the month of May, and we get things started with the oval activity on Monday. We may hear from some of the top finishers, including the winner. We're in the media center where they will bring in the top finishers, including the winner, Will Power, in just a little bit.
Well, you do a tremendous job of checking the Twitter during the course of trackside and inviting folks to tweet in. This was not directed at us, but I thought it was interesting. Follow Marco Andretti's Twitter feed. I thought I would share it with you. Sorry, Tony Kanaan, and saying that to his Twitter account and my guys, was looking in my mirror. Long day of work for crap result yet again. Glad the Indy 500 is up next.
And that's the second time that Marco has had to do an entire race with no opportunity. This time he serves the penalty, so he's at the tail end of the lead lap and eventually a lap down. At Barber, they had a mechanical problem, and he started the race three laps down. And I was in his pit listening to his radio, and that wasn't a really a pleasant conversation as they were giving him instructions to save fuel and just make it a test session. And he felt like he was going to have a car that can compete, and all of a sudden now you're just going through the motions for a full test session and trying to stay out of people's way, and that's ultimately what he and Tony Kanaan had to deal with today as well. Didn't hear Kanaan say anything on the radio at all. It was just, all right, I'll suck it up, I'll make the best of it,
right.
And better to not say anything at all, but you know he's thinking it at this point. Power wins, a dominating drive by more than 5 seconds on Scott Dixon. 7 more seconds back to Ryan Hunter-Reay. Simon Pagenaud finishes 4th. Elio Castroneves rounds out the top 5. A great recovery for Graham Rahal, who started 20th. He finishes 6th. Max Chilton from 14th to 7th. Alexander Rossi finishes 8th. Spencer Pigot goes from 16th to 9th. And Juan Pablo Montoya in his season debut, a tune-up for the Indianapolis 500 and an opportunity to win another race. He starts 5th and finishes 10th. More to come from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. This is 93.5.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway with Greg Rexhaw and Kevin Lee. Will Power has won the IndyCar Grand Prix.
Scott Dixon has 40 career wins, and he's the runner-up for the 35th time and is talking with the media now.
There was a report right away that you knew you were loose almost from the beginning. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, pretty accurate. It was tough. The harder you pushed, you just ran into more degradation. But I think that's fantastic. You know, good job by Firestone to have that. You know, it makes it a lot harder to maintain the tires. You know, with degradation, and the difference between the blacks and the reds, I think, was perfect. So hopefully we can mirror that. You know, and the things and adjustments that we made, we just didn't really fix it too much. It was a little bit better, but first stop we had to take a bunch of front wing out, which helped a little bit. But the car was pretty good on the new reds right at the end there, but just couldn't hold on to the reds.
We're going to take the drivers as they come, so we'll go ahead and take some questions. Looks like Andrew's got a microphone on that side. The turnover, the Colts did that a lot last year.
Okay. Scott, very late in the race, I think 69 or 70, you overtook Castroneves. Can you give some details? Did he have troubles or slower, or did he make a mistake?
No, I think it was just strategy. You know, he used new reds at the start. Everybody else was unused. And then I don't know how his tire plan went after that, but I think he'd use red, 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 and then use black at the end. So it is just part of the strategy. We used it on our second stint, and we dropped back a fair bit. He was a bit of a sitting duck. It's never fun, I think, being in this situation at the end when you're racing for a podium or even for a victory, when the strategy just plays out that way. But it just depends how you play your cards, and obviously there, it was going to be extremely tough to hold on with the black tires.
So was the big upset of the race everybody getting through turn one on the first lap?
Yeah, that was good. I was expecting it to be, a little bit worse, but everybody, seemed to keep it pretty clean. And I don't know what happened back further. I think there was some debris maybe on the first lap, 7. So, that was good. That's the first time I think we achieved that. So, well done.
And the start of the season you're having, you haven't won a race yet, but you're off to a very good start. How invaluable is that going into the Indy 500?
It's valuable. I don't think it really matters too much, going into the 500. It matters for the championship for sure, but the 500 is definitely its own event, and excited to start off the month. I think with Honda, the Honda package will be a little more favoured. Going in, hopefully Chevy don't make a big gain here. So we'll see how it plays out.
And for Ryan, how much did your team need this result?
Yeah, we've had a pretty tricky beginning of the year, I guess you can say. It's been one thing or another, really. Some misfortune, bad luck, some we brought upon ourselves, but it's been one thing or another. So it's just nice to bank a result, finally. And we feel like hopefully we can start our season now, get off to a good start, and hopefully next year is two spot or next the next race is two spots better. But it was nice to have a good solid result today, finishing 3rd.
First podium of the year for you. Yeah, so that's pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, we're heading the right direction. We need more weekends like this. It was a great race, though. I mean, we had some excellent battles there in the beginning, especially through the first half of the race. I think Simon Pagenaud and I went back and forth four or five times in one lap. So there was a lot of back and forth, and looked like there was a lot of good hard wheel-to-wheel racing. But in the end, I smoked it in a little bit too hot into the pits and delayed my stop, which gave up some time to those guys. But it seemed like Will and Scott were checking out pretty well.
Ryan, were you surprised that, you know, everyone's been talking about the drag induced by the Honda Aero kit on this track? Were you surprised that you were able to legitimately beat two Penske cars in a straight fight?
I was a little bit surprised, yeah. I mean, Elio, like Scott mentioned, Elio's strategy, I think it was a good try, but it didn't end up working out for him in the end because of the, you know, he was on primaries at the end, kind of a sitting duck for us that had pace on reds. So, but yeah, I think the strategy or the pace for us was encouraging, you know, straight up just drove away from Pagenaud. So that was good.
Andrew's on this side of the room, on the other side of the room. Any additional questions for our second, third place runner today? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming in, guys.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks, guys.
Ryan Hunter-Reay, Scott Dixon, both former winners of the Indianapolis 500, finish on the podium at Indianapolis on the road course. As far as the championship stands now, Simon Pagenaud maintains the lead, 10 points in front of Scott Dixon. Joseph Newgarden is third, but pretty significant number back. He is 39 off of the lead of Pagenaud. Then Elio Castroneves is fourth, just three more markers back. Will Power has jumped up to fifth. He was something like tied for 13th two races ago, and now he's back up to fifth, and he's within basically a race weekend, just shy of a race weekend. And keep in mind, it's double points for the Indianapolis 500. There are points for qualifying, so if it goes well for you and you're chief competitors in the championship don't go well, you can easily come out of Indianapolis with the lead. James Hinchcliffe, 6. Sebastian Bourdais falls all the way to 8. Then Ryan Hunter-Reay, Alexander Rossi, and Tony Kanaan. The top 10 in the championship. And that's kind of about it as far as the championship goes the rest of this month. I mentioned that today. That's one
right.
of the things we can do here today is because this is another IndyCar Series race. This is a season race. But once we get to Monday, yes, there are a lot of points paid, and maybe those of us in the inner workings of the sport will talk about that, but we all understand for the grand masses, it is not about points at all. It's about winning the Indianapolis 500.
The IndyCar points conversation begins again on June 3rd after about 7 o'clock this evening.
Yep.
First race in Detroit.
Yep.
That's what becomes a big deal.
Yeah. I say that, and you say that, and I agree. However, the way the rules are, it has become more of a points. Otherwise, you wouldn't bother paying all the points for qualifying and the double points for the race. And the idea behind that was, well, they're going to be encouraged and they're going to be required to qualify multiple times, so we need to make it worth something. And if you're going to have to go back out there again in the Fast 9 after you already have achieved a decent start, then we got to pay it something. We don't have the cash to do it, so we'll have to pay points. So that's kind of the idea behind that. 317-239-1070 is the number if you have something for us, or at KevinLee23 on Twitter. Some numbers I mentioned. Power's 30th win of the season. He was tied with Elio Castroneves and Rick Mears. Ironic that three Penske stalwarts all tied there for 11th. So Power now has sole possession of 11th on the all-time win list. Power has now won two of the four Grand Prix of Indianapolis. His teammate Simon Pagenaud has won the other two. Team Penske has not won all four, though. Pagenaud's first win in the inaugural came when he was with Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports. This was win number 190 in IndyCar for Roger Penske. And Power now is the fifth different winner in five races this season in IndyCar. So that is very significant.
How often on a road or street course do you have a race that is completely green, that is caution-free?
It has happened more in the last few years than in recent years. I know it happened last year. At least once. I need my man Russ Thompson, who's probably listening. If he's done with the ABC broadcast, he's probably not done yet. But he'll be on the road back to Nashville soon, and he's my fact checker, and he will look these things up for us. So I'll do some thinking on that and try to see when the last time. And I'm sure somebody's tweeted that already, so I'll catch up to date on the Twitter machine. But it's happened a few times in recent years. Some of that's the fact that they're not as many mechanical issues as there were in years past. Some is to the fact that the skill level is pretty high in IndyCar. There aren't any drivers that stand out and say, well, they're only here because they have money and they're not qualified to be here. Everyone's qualified to be here at this point. But, yeah, that did change things up. And frankly, from an entertainment standpoint, cautions are good. You know, when you have restarts, you have the ability for things to happen. We had some racing throughout the pack, just none at the front because Will Power was so dominant.
Well, I would say, especially on a road course race or a street course race, dictate strategy. Caution that means too. That teams can vary things up, and nobody had that opportunity today. One of the only guys, and it really wasn't a strategy, it was just they were able to short pit at the end that helped get him the solid finish that he did. It was Graham Rahal. He may have been the last guy to come to pit road under green flag conditions, and his last stint may have been 19 laps or 20 because he was hitting that 22 to 23 lap window virtually every time. That might have helped buy him a spot or two that you really couldn't mix things up in terms of going on a different strategy because of the fact that there were simply no cautions today.
Ask and you shall receive. Russ Thompson texts
me. Thanks, Russ. You're the man.
And tells me Long Beach in 2016.
So not that long ago.
Long Beach was the last time that we went caution-free for the entire race. Donald Davidson is here, so if you have something for Donald, you can call in, and we can talk a bit about the history of this place or the history of the little race that's coming up in a couple of weeks. 317-239-1070 is the number. Donald, your impressions of what we saw today?
Well, the weather was great,
yes.
And I thought, as it was going on, I thought, boy, I hope we can keep this. But I was watching Tony Kanaan at one point after he'd had his problem was continuously either the fastest or one of the fastest two or three, and I expected him to be able to have an opportunity to get to the front, but that never happened, and mainly because there were no cautions. And Connor Daly had a good run going. I mean, just a local favorite there. He got to eighth and stayed there for quite a while, and then faded a little bit. He had a long pit stop and then never seemed to be able to quite get back into it. And the fact that it was all about to pass and the drivers, there was no breaks with cautions and so on and so forth. So, you know, each person, it was a fair race in that respect. I don't know if that's really the correct way to put it, but when you look at the final results and you look at the elapsed time between, you know, first and second or second and third, third and fourth or whatever it is, when sometimes people say, look how close the finish was here. There was only, you know, 18 one millionth of a second between first and second. He said, yes, but you know, the green didn't come out until the last lap. This was just a case of just running the race, and pit stops had a lot to do with it. And then, of course, you feel for the people that had the problems. And was it Newgarden
the pit speed limiter problem?
Yes.
Yep.
And
had two different drive through penalties.
And the thinking is apparently Tim Cintric, and maybe you reported this, Greg. It was Kevin, that Tim Cintric apologized to him over the headset and said, you know, that, but basically I think that it was our fault. They're going to look into it. And if there was a technical glitch, I mean, I don't know if you could come back and, you know, get some time reinstated. Probably not, but that seems...
No.
No, but I mean, I always feel for the driver when... I mean, if the car blows up, and I guess that's something, but if something like that... Just seems that's a really tough call on a driver.
Yeah, them's the brakes, unfortunately. Yeah. That's the team's responsibility make sure the car is mechanically sound, and those are things that you calibrate, and you know, and everybody's always pushing the edge. They want to go 49 miles an hour instead of 50.
I always felt bad when a driver was penalized, or the car was penalized, but obviously the driver with it, when they used to have... you'd be penalized for running over an air hose. And I thought, well, that's not necessarily the driver's fault. And you know, I don't even know really why that was a violation. I know why it was a violation, but I thought that's awfully tough that a driver loses several positions because of something like that.
And by the way, that did happen in today's race. Michaela Loesch, not that it really affected his overall outcome. He finished 18th, but he was he was given a violation for running over a...
We champion the drivers, but it is a team sport, and when the team, and unfortunately those guys don't get the credit that they should when they successfully get through all three pit stops, or when it comes to the 500, all seven pit stops, they only get singled out, unfortunately, when things go wrong, so we should spend more time in talking about that they flawlessly executed each and every pit stop, because... the driver isn't doing anything if the team doesn't prepare the car correctly, and the drivers are good about that. It's not just lip service when they talk about how much of a team effort it was. So today, Will Power clearly had the team. They had a perfect day, and he was, if not perfect, very close to it on the racetrack, wins by 5 seconds. We've got calls for Donald, and we'll get to those coming up in just a moment at 317-239-1070. Post-race from the IndyCar Grand Prix at the Indian... The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the month of May is in full swing, and the IndyCar Grand Prix today goes to Will Power. He wins from pole and dominates by over 5 seconds. Scott Dixon finishes second, then it's Ryan Hunter-Reay, Simon Pagenaud, Elio Castroneves. The top five practice begins for the Indianapolis 500 at noon on Monday. The first 2 hours for rookies and veterans that are not competing full-time, and then at 2 o'clock, open to all, and next weekend will be qualifying. And we don't have the time for the moment to explain the format. We'll save that for another time. So we're going to talk about today and also yesteryear and whatever you like. Donald Davidson is here with Greg Regstraw. I'm Kevin Lee. 239-1070 is the number. We may break in and hear from Will Power if he comes into the media center in the next few minutes. But let's check in with Carrie in Indianapolis with a question. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, this is Terry, and my question is about women. What is IndyCar doing to recruit women, especially women of color? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I don't think that they recruit drivers at all. They put races on and wait for the participants to show up. I think that's the answer to that.
Okay.
And there have been 9 women driving the 500. There's one entered this year. And there have been 2 African-American drivers thus far, and it's open to everybody. So the recruiting part doesn't go into it at all.
I think that's a fair way to look at it. It's open for all. And,
yes.
And one thing motor racing has had from a driving standpoint is, as far as sports are concerned, well, you could make an argument that this is the one where it's... It's the most open to all, that they everyone can compete on a level playing field.
The main thing is that the sanctioning body creates the rules and puts on the races and opens up the entries. And it's up for the teams to bring the cars that comply with the regulations. And the drivers are screened when they're offered up the first time, the experience, and so on and so forth.
And if you want to talk about non-driving competitors and people working for teams, I have just noticed in the 15 years or so that I've been with the series full time, there has been a significant increase. When you walk up and down pit road, to be honest, I don't know the number because we don't really notice anymore. They're just part of the crew. They're part of the team, but there are quite a few female engineer types, data acquisition, crew members. The head of the Firestone Engineering Department now, Kara Adams, is a female, and this is a woman that knows motorsports and knows the science behind a race tire. So the barrier has been broken. It's much different than it was 50 years ago, and that's something I think everyone can be proud of. Thank you for the call, Carrie. 317, or maybe it was Terry.
Terry,
okay. 317-239-1070 is the telephone number. Question for Donald, or if it's about today's race, then I'm going to guess Donald will defer to Greg and I speaking on that. Jay is next. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Jay, are you with us?
We're great. Good, buddy.
Just really comment about the race. Really enjoyed it. We were in the turn 7 sector. And for our group, very entertaining, you know, the whole race, even though it was caution-free. And the young guys really put on a show in our corner. Rossi, Chilton, early on in the race, Connor Daly, they all made some very aggressive moves and passes, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. But, you know, pretty much every few laps, all eyes were on turn 7 from where we were, because you could see him a little bit on the backstretch and tell somebody was jumping out and trying to make a move. It didn't work out for all of them, but they were all pretty exciting. And yeah, a bunch of kids in our section too, and I think for the kids, they made it a lot of fun, because for my group, I wanted to point out every time it was one of the young guys that was making the turn, saying, hey, that's Connor Daly, that's Alexander Rossi, these are young Americans dive bombing people in these corners. Now Scott Dixon showed him the proper way to do it when he passed Castro Neves for second place. But even at the end of the race, with Will Powers taking the checkered flag, you had Andretti, who's stuck at the back marker in this race, and then you had Ray Hall and Chilton, I believe, battling behind him, and our whole group thought they were just going to pile up, because Andretti looked like he'd already lifted, and they come screaming through 7 trying to pass each other for position. It's a very exciting race. I thought people did a great job, and I didn't really have a question. I just I love IndyCar, and so any chance I get to bring people or tell people about it, and I think this is the best kept secret at Indy, because you get more fans at this race than you do the 500, who are IndyCar fans. They appreciate a road course race, even if it's caution free for the most part. I enjoy that and that interaction with people. So it was cool. I had people from
thank you, Jay.
All around.
I'm going to interrupt you because Will Power. Let's go ahead and fade him down there. Thank you. I'm going to interrupt you, Jay, because Will Power is entered the room, and let's hear from the winner addressing the media here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Comment was, it's a common thing for a broadcaster to say when a driver's out front and seemingly cruising, that they're thinking what can go wrong. And in your case, given the year you've had, did you think to yourself at some point, oh, my gosh, what can go wrong here?
No, I was just focusing on the job, you know, because it wasn't that easy. Like, weren't cruising out front. Like, the tires would degrade, so you had to push, you know, you had to push without leaning on it too much. Like, in the first stint, I pushed way too hard early, and then Elio was just all on me. You know, I pulled a gap and then struggled at the end of the stint, so, and then he ended up jumping me. So, you know, it was good. I mean, the Firestone bought a really good tire for racing. You know, had a lot of grip in qualifying, and then, you know, the grip slowly went away over the race, which created some good strategies and racing, you know. So, yeah, they're very good at, I mean, it's so good to have tires like Firestone tires, because you never, you know, you never worried about failures or any of that type of thing. They're very, very good.
Andrew's on that side of the room. I'm on this side. We'll take some questions.
Your first win with Myron. So how important was that for you and for the team and mostly for him?
Yeah, he did a really good job all weekend. He had a great strategy in qualifying to not sit around and wait till the last minute. He said, why don't we just, as soon as we're done on a black line, just go straight out, and we go clear track for qualifying every time. So, called a really good race, and getting used to having him on the radio.
Yeah, well, based on the way things have gone, you know, this year for you, especially that last race at Barber, were you hearing things in your head in those last 10 laps? I mean, you know, what was going on there from an anxious standpoint?
No, it's just very conscious of the gap that Dixon was closing. And, you know, and I was thinking, like, he's going to burn his tires off. Like, for the way he was closing, like, I reckon, you know, his tires should go off, but he kept going, but then, and then suddenly, boom, it started to go the other way. I'm like, all right, we're in good shape here. And that was the case.
What does it do for momentum going into the next 2 weeks?
you know, it's funny. Momentum, you know, once your whole crew and team believes that you have a shot at winning races, which we have had all year, but, you know, you execute, it definitely gives them confidence. So it's just good. Get a win. Very, very good for everyone.
Excuse me. I've got
bless you all. When you do have a weekend like this where you lead every session, get the pole, lead the majority of the laps, how special is that because of how rare it is in modern-day IndyCar where it's so competitive and you've got so many potential different winners?
Yeah, you don't even think, it's funny how that happens because you don't even think about it. You don't even remember that you're quickest in every session. It just happens to be. I think I remember thinking that after warm-up. I was like, wow, I've actually been quickest in every session. So, it would be amazing to win the race. But then to go on and be quickest in every session during the month, now that would be something that's impossible. Yeah, you'd have to have something special there. But to be quickest in qualifying and win the 500 would be something. That would be great. We'd be definitely focusing on that.
Well, they were saying on TV, the broadcasters were, that in the past, if you had experienced some of the issues that you had the last few weeks, there would be a lot of anxiety and anger, and they felt like things have changed a little bit with you since the birth of your son. Do you think that that's true?
Yeah, I think that and experience, just experience, not just on the track, but off the track as well. You know, last year definitely had a few health issues to deal with, and I think that's just how life is. You have good and bad times, and the bad doesn't last forever, and neither does the good. So you got to kind of weather it and not get too down in the bad times and too up in the good times. It's the same in racing. You're gonna have your bad runs. You can't just continually have good runs and everything fall your way. But on those bad days, is how you win a championship, is, you know, hanging on to a reasonable result.
But I watched the celebration, Will, and this is an old parent. You couldn't seem to get the sunglasses on the boy there. I mean,
yeah,
what's the deal there?
You know, it's like when you got a baby, if baby doesn't want something on him, you ain't going to get it on. You don't argue. It's like, okay, don't do that.
Other questions for Will.
Will, to your left, Elio was saying that this is like a perfect track for you, and I wonder if you think that that is also true.
Yeah, it's a good track for me. I mean, I think every track is now. I mean, I don't feel like I can win on every track. Every track. I can't say that I go to a race ever thinking that I can't win, ever. Doesn't matter, oval, road course. I mean, my oval results over the last year and into this year have been better than my road course, almost. I mean, just being top twos and threes and threes. So, I mean, I feel like everywhere I go, I have a shot.
Does that surprise you when you look at those results and say, how about that? Or are you surprised that that's equalized in that way?
No, just, you know, I have a lot of experience now. You know, I just know the game so well in so many ways. Even if I feel bad, I know I can do a very good job, like, just through experience. I mean, I just know the car, know the tires, know the series. Just, you know it so well. You can just see why it takes a young guy so long to get it all together. Because, you know, all these guys have... You know, it's not like there's new people in every year. It's the same people every year. So it's tough if you want to come into the series and win.
Yeah, 175th start, by the way, for Will. Questions?
Sorry.
When you came here 12 years ago, did you think that this quickly you would be in the ranks where you've got more wins than Rick Mears and Elio Castroneves, who at that time didn't have that many wins, but...
Yeah, it's. I have to say, in 2008, I remember looking at when I first started there, just with a bit of envy at the guys who drove for Penske. You know, Ryan Briscoe, who's Australian as well. I was like, man, how nice would it be able to wear that suit, and be in that situation, not this desperate situation that I was in with, you know, basically a one-year deal and kind of shaky all the time, not knowing, you know, it's, you know, that's tough for a driver to get through that period of every Christmas, I'm not sure if I've got a ride the next year. If you can get past that and gain the experience you need, then, you know, like, I would never have dreamed that I would have got that ride in 2009 as a part-time with Penske. Never would have. I had an argument with my wife because I signed a deal on A1GP, and she said, "You're crazy. What if Ganassi or Penske call?" I said, that's never going to happen. Sure enough, Elio has an issue, and suddenly there's a chance there. But, yeah, just shows you, you know, women are always right. You got to listen.
That's willpower. Who wins for the 30th time today, and he has done very well listening to his wife Liz over the last decade or so that they have been together. Big win for him today at Indianapolis. We continue in a moment on 107.5. At the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Will Power has won and dominated the IndyCar GP. He wins for the second time in its four runnings. Simon Pagenaud has won the other two. Power wins by more than 5 seconds over Scott Dixon today. Ryan Hunter Ray, Simon Pagenaud, Elio Castroneves round out the top five. Then Graham Rahal, who went from 20th to 6th. Max Chilton, Alexander Rossi, Spencer Pigott, and Juan Pablo Montoya round out the top 10. I'm Kevin Lee with Greg Rakestraw. Donald Davidson is here. Let's sneak in a phone call or two. And John in Williamsport is next. Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Hey, I want to hear you talk about Lee Elkins, if you would.
Oh, okay. Are you a relative? Because I've been getting a lot of Lee Elkins questions recently.
I am. Well, he is a cousin of my grandfather.
All right, then. This is probably the fourth Lee Elkins question I've had, mostly at the museum. Anyway, Lee Elkins had the McNamara Motor Express Company and ran cars, was a car owner, McNamara Specials owner and sponsor. 1951 was the first entry of his. Carl Scarborough drove for him and was the fourth fastest qualifier with a dirt track car, but he didn't start fourth because he'd qualified late and started in the back. And because of the time that we have here, I'm going to jump around a little bit. Bob Swikert drove for Lee Elkins in 52. And actually, 51, there was Gene Force finished 8th, and which I don't think I mentioned. Then 52 was Bob Swikert, made his first Indianapolis 500 start, did not finish, was 26th. 53, Carl Scarborough, so Edward, two cars there for 1951. I'm not doing this very well. Trying to hurry, and that never works. Fifth in 1954 with Mike Nazareth with a Roadster. And fifth in 1956 with Dick Rathman in a Roadster. And then had the pole with Dick Rathman in 1958. And unfortunately, that didn't work out very well, but I'm not going to belabor that. And his last entry for a while was 1959 with Dick Rathman. That was a DNF, but he was actually running fourth fairly late in the race and then had a pit fire and was out. And Lee Elkins was out of it for quite a few years. He had sprint cars. At one time, he was running three sprint cars. And a number of his drivers were known to occasionally have a disagreement in a watering hole. So he had Mike Nazaruk, Andy Linden, and Ed Elysian at one time, three, all at the same time. But great success with Andy Linden was second in the sprint car championships in 1957. But anyway, after the 59 season, Lee Elkins dropped out for a while. And then it was about 60 or 67, he came back in with a midget. And then eventually, and ran sprints a little bit, but eventually came in with an Indianapolis car, a rear-engine car, now 1975. He took a great liking to Bill Puterbaugh, and Puterbaugh had three starts for Lee Elkins with a it was the fastest rookie qualifier in 1975, which was the first year for that award, and then he finished seventh. The race was shortened because of rain. After 174 laps, it was a deluge, but Peter Ball was running in seventh, and he got the Rookie of the Year award. He also drove for Lee Elkins in 76 and 77, and was 12th in the 1977 race. So probably didn't do him full justice. He won a couple of championship races with Mike Nazarek, but probably his greatest success was with his sprint cars.
Okay. Thank you for the question, John, and thank you for the call. Beer Mike is next on the program.
How about your Beer Mike? What's going on, buddy?
Okay.
Hey, Big Dog, is that you, Wakestraw?
Of course it is.
Okay, great.
That's the first Big Dog reference we've had on the Talk of Gasoline Alley.
First and last, probably.
I'm honored to talk to the historian. I'm a African-American male. I turned 50 in June. I've attended 46 Indianapolis 500s.
Have you?
Uh-huh. Yes, I have. Now, my question, and I need this answer, is can a person buy their way with no experience into the Indianapolis 500?
No.
No.
You have to be approved.
No, you cannot.
How much experience do you need?
You had to have had success in other forms of racing. You don't just show up at the gate and say, "I want to take a rookie test." You have to come as you would in just about any other sport. I mean, you don't show up at the Yankees and say, "I've never played baseball professionally, but I want to be on the team." So you have to go out. If you're going to make it in Indianapolis, you probably should have started running go-karts or quarter midgets these days, probably by the age of 5 or 6, and which is what they're doing now. I mean, this kid's starting out at 4 years, so almost I think that probably everybody that you would run into that is running now started with go-karts probably by the time they were at least 10, and you have to have skills, but also results.
Yeah.
And so if you get a media guide and look at all the drivers, including the rookies, it's pretty extensive what their accomplishments are before they ever show up for the first time.
There are a few examples of guys that had been very successful in business and had some money that did decide they wanted to become race car drivers a little later on, but even them, and let's go to some recent examples, someone like a Marty Roth. Yes. Marty was very wealthy and decided he wanted to do this, but it took him many, many, many years of toiling at the lower levels and showing...
Even motorcycles, by the
correct.
Way.
Correct. And I'm not going to tell you that Marty was really good at this, but he was competent enough, and people might make fun of these types of drivers, but I guarantee you they would run circles literally around people like me and you who got in a car and tried to do this.
Well, he drove in the Indianapolis 500 four times.
Exactly.
And but the thing is that he didn't start out here. He, as you said, he'd been racing for years. He started on motorcycles, and so all of these people, even the young ones, have had great extensive background and experience.
So when you win that lottery and have the $10 million or so that it would cost you from startup to get to IndyCar, what you need to go do is either the Skip Barber Series or the Lucas Oil Racing Series, which you can do for, say $3,000 or
expensive.
So. You can go do the three-day school, go from there, get your license, keep going, and then within about maybe 5 years, you would have the ability to not run it into the wall and run 220-plus miles an hour. And then you got to figure out how to deal with traffic. So.
And then another point is that whenever we get a question like this, it's hard for everybody. It's hard for everybody. It was not a breeze for anybody.
You know, we all understand that there's money involved, and if you have a great deal of cash, you have the ability to separate yourself from someone else. But there is definitely a talent level that is needed, and the ones that have more talent are the ones that are more successful on track. It's a fair question, though. Thank you for calling Beer Mike. Michael is up with us next here in Indianapolis. Hi, Michael. You're on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
All right, we're
still here. We were trying to chat with Michael. Michael, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I just have a question for Donald. If he knew Dave Pratt, who is a cameraman for IndyCar before that.
Dave Pratt?
Yeah. He was a cameraman for, yeah, Dave Pratt. He lives in Bloomington, Indiana now, and he used to, before IndyCar was IndyCar, a lot of different racing and whatnot. I just wasn't sure if you knew him. He's still part of the bench racers and whatnot.
I don't think I know Dave Pratt by name. I know a lot of people.
and you might recognize him.
I know a lot of names, but I think I might know who you mean.
He's a cameraman for a long time.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the call. Generally, we don't just ask if you know someone that I know, unless there's a specific point around that. But that was good. You know what? I think we've done enough work here today. I think it's time for hockey and to get set for the greatest spectacle in racing, which is coming up. Or you can come to the go-kart track with me. I'll be there at 7:30 tomorrow morning, so 6 a.m. wake-up call.
There is no day off for you, man.
Yeah, and I pay to go to the track tomorrow instead of getting paid. I think I've got this all wrong. I've got to figure out how to do this a little bit differently.
Fits in very nicely to one of the previous questions that we had.
Exactly, and I don't have $10 million, so I'm not sure that my kid will be racing in the Indianapolis 500. We're going to enjoy go-kart racing for now until Dad runs out of money. Donald, thank you. We will see
you
on Monday night. Right here
indeed.
At 8 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
Greg, always a pleasure. Good work today
thank
on Pit Road on IndyCar Radio. Will Power wins today, and Russ Thompson sends me one more note, our statistician working today from the ABC broadcast. I mentioned how Power had jumped up into the championship, back somewhat within range, and he says, keep in mind, last year, coming into the 500, Will Power was ninth in points, 133 back. He is much closer in range now, so look out for the rest of the series, the rest of the way. It is going to be a great championship battle with the likes of Simon Pagenaud and Scott Dixon and Will Power and Elio Castroneves and so many others. But the focus is now on the 101st Indianapolis 500. Trackside Monday night at 7 o'clock, followed by Donald at 8 o'clock. We'll have track updates at about a quarter after or so, starting at 11 a.m. throughout the day here on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. Thanks to Craig Collins back in the studio. For Scott Johnston, Greg Regstraw, and Donald Davidson, I'm Kevin Lee. Will Power wins the IndyCar GP. Coming up, it's NHL Stanley Cup playoff action. Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals on the way in just a moment. Face-off is less than 10 minutes away between Pittsburgh and Ottawa. Thanks for joining us on 107.5.